Welcome to Career Tools. Today's show, Press Relations, part 2 of 2. If you haven't listened to last week's show, you may want to do so first. But assuming you have, here we go with the conclusion to Press Relations. So now you've ignored our initial advice to just say no comment at the beginning. You've got into this conversation. You don't have command of all the facts. And we say you don't have command of all the facts. You don't have command of all the facts relative to the argument.
Yes.
But you also don't have command of the facts that are not relative to the argument, but the person interviewing you thinks
yes.
are relevant.
Yes.
And therefore, you can't defend yourself. You don't want to say no comment because that makes you just doesn't make you look good. So,
right.
What do you do then?
Well, you go back and say no comment in the beginning, right?
Right. Okay. Let's
right.
See, we can't get.
I love. I love the way we introduced to this point. We introduced to us. Okay, if you want to ignore what we told you earlier, but okay, right? You're absolutely right. It's going to happen. And look, folks, don't think you're hiding out there. We see you. And we see you secretly craving being interviewed by members of the media and the press. You think it's cool. And that's fine as long as you're prepared for it. But if you're not prepared and cool goes to messy and you weren't prepared for the problem you created, it's unlikely you're going to be prepared for the mitigation afterwards. They know that the media know we're concerned about what they think about us. They know we want to be quoted. They know we want to be seen as knowledgeable. They know we want to be seen as a leader in our firm or industry who are being asked for their opinion. But remember, they're not asking you because you're a leader. They're asking you because they think they can get a quote from you. And here's the key. The motivations of the media are so fundamentally different than ours that most of us have a hard time understanding why the conversation or the interview or whatever goes so much differently than we had expected. That friend standing next to you, listening to the conversation and you ripping on someone or telling somebody how bad your boss is, he hears it and he says, boy, that could go on my blog as a relationship to this or that. And then someone else who is at the party comments on that person's blog and says, oh yeah, that was Bob. He said, you know, he was really ripping on his boss, wasn't he? And then suddenly, your boss, who for some reason you friended on Facebook, connects this somehow through your friends or whatever. And now suddenly your boss is saying, hey, what'd you say at that party about me? Because it's pretty clear it was funny or dramatic enough that several people mentioned it in several different media. And I'm wondering, you know, what's my mitigation at this point? But fundamentally, the press and media do not want what we want. They don't want what we want ever, 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 ever. They want traffic. They want sales. They don't want to tout our product. They want the people who read their material to want to know about your product so they'll come to the media for more information because that's where the value is. And look, what this means is when we get challenged, we have to repeat ourselves and we have to say things like, as I said, and my point here is that, or another one is just to be clear. And look, it's not even wise when challenged, when directly, forcefully challenged, to say, I disagree, as that very phrase is considered confrontational and can be totally used out of context. Another thing I've discovered is from my work in politics is that a lot of people today are learning about how to interact with the media based on how elected officials and politicians and people involved in government interact with the media. And the entire governmental structure, at least in the U.S., is based on at least a two-party system, put in more generally, internationally, a multi-party or a greater than one party system, which by definition creates conflict. And the media is going to try to make that conflict as interesting as possible. So whatever you do, don't disagree. It is not disagreeing to restate your point when you're being interviewed. And look, if you're thinking, okay, wow, but Mark, they could write Horseman disagrees saying X, Y, and Z again. Well, then I think we're beginning to see the wisdom of no comment, right? And look, here's the thing. This is why training is so important. And this is why firms offer it to the people who they expect to be talking to the press. You're going to feel uncomfortable. We're going to feel uncomfortable doing this, repeating ourselves, It's not normal communication style. It's not polite in a conversation when someone says, well, I disagree. What about this? And then we simply repeat our point. In fact, we've had other casts where we say, if you repeat your point after someone disagrees, you look like you're browbeating them. But folks, this is not a conversation. If we told the media person that we're talking to that we felt like we were in a conversation and this doesn't feel right, they would laugh out loud right in front of us. This is not a conversation. This is an interview. Everything you say to me is an interview. Everything you say is on the record. And again, so if you're thinking that feels awkward to simply repeat what you just said and to not address the negatives of the, even though the negatives that are being presented to you are incredibly stupid and inane, and maybe you'd say to yourself, gee, I'd rather say nothing under the circumstances. Well, that's good. It's one of our recommended techniques. Actually, I think it's our first recommended technique, which is no comment, right?
It sounds like a pattern. It sounds like the no comment thing keeps coming up.
Yeah. And look, folks, we're not saying you can never talk to the media. We're saying know what the risks associated with these various things are and handle it right and start with no comment.
Okay. So I don't understand why you're making such a point of this, because in my experience, isn't the media just reporting? Aren't they just out there collecting facts and reporting the facts?
Yeah, that's right. We must be wrong. I mean, they're nice people, the media are. Look, we probably should have shared this earlier, but we wanted to get right away to actionable guidance, tell everybody what to do, right? And we've touched on a related point to this about them not just reporting to Mike's chagrin. Their motivations are different than ours, and they don't see any communication as a conversation. Every communication the media has with us is an interview in the sense that it could be attributed to us and our firm in their firm's medium. The media are not simply unbiased, uninvolved, disinterested bystanders. There are all kinds of reasons for this, not the least of which is that they work for a capitalistic organization in most cases, just like we do. And drama is what sells ads or draws eyeballs, just like I alluded to a minute ago. Drama is almost always negative. It's rarely positive. Drama, by definition, includes conflict. And for those of us who mistakenly think the media are simply reporting, consider this. In order to be unbiased, the media would have to present both sides of the story. That means asking us about what our competitors or detractors think and or have said. That means conflict. That means us looking bad unless we say no comment or say positive on our message by repeating it when we have to. You have to understand that. It's an underlying principle. It's not purposely. This point, the media are not just reporting, is not directly specifically actionable the way no comment is actionable. But we've got to know this so that there is a natural reticence, a natural hesitancy among any professional who's listening to the kind of interactions you're going to have with the media. You have to start with, okay, this person is in the media or could be in the media. I need to be cautious, at least initially.
I think some folks in the media go out of their way to try to reduce conflict during an interview. For example, I've seen very often where the interviewer will ask the interviewee, you know, here's what the opposing view thinks. What do you think about that? And that's a very effective way of reducing conflict.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's have you describe the opposing view one way, and then have your opponent or the person who's against you in some way. And folks, don't think that you're the only person that has no one against you, because believe me, the media can find somebody who has a counterpoint. They may not be against you, but they have a counterpoint. If Horstman and Ozan are the two counterpoints to one another, why don't we get Horstman to characterize what Ozan's view is and Ozan to characterize Horstman's view? The great thing about that is we're going to be wrong, so they can cite our inaccuracies. We're going to be emotional, probably, which means we're going to increase the chances for drama. It is the classic way for us to be caused to look bad is we're they're perceived to be in the reasonable guise of presenting both sides of the story. And here's the thing. They don't need to do it accurately. They don't need to represent the other point of view accurately. They tell us what others are thinking or saying. Again, they're just trying to elicit dramatic comments. We need to know how to respond to these to avoid having our discussion become negative. The only reason we should be talking to the press, particularly if we're talking to the press officially in our role as an member of the organization. And by the way, you don't have to be told you're talking to them officially. If they find out you're at XYZ, you are speaking officially for the company. In the same way that if you're a manager and you can fire somebody because you represent the company to that person, The role power that you have internally that is relatively small becomes huge outside the company because you're associated with the firm. So we need to know how to respond. Again, as we did Wendy's Law about this stuff, many of us mistakenly believe we've been asked because we're important enough and we have a desire to appear knowledgeable. That's not the reason we're being asked. We're being asked because they think we'll talk.
Right. Are there any patterns of behavior or talk from reporters or folks from the media that would suggest that this tactic is starting to be employed?
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed in the last 5 years as modern media have exploded, and there are so many good things associated with that, but one of the underlying negatives is 20 years ago, if you were interviewed by someone in the media, they would use these very same phrases. Things like, well, yes, but what do you think about this? Or isn't it possible that? Or you can see where someone might disagree, or some people are saying. 20 years ago, they used these very same phrases, and they did so very reasonably. And it was almost like two professors elegantly, professionally, eruditely describing or declaiming about a particular scientific point of view. Well, let's talk about the other side for a moment. Let's get a full understanding of this for our members and listeners and readers and so on. Great. Those same questions, those same points are being made today, but now they're being made shrilly. Now they're being made in order to draw an emotional response from the interviewee. Now media, and I'm not saying modern media, it's old media and new media have learned. I think new media is the one that pioneered it, but now old media and new media both don't say, well, isn't it possible? They say, but Mr. Horseman, isn't it possible? And there's tonation that is, there's tonal quality that is dripping with sarcasm and with what amounts to attack.
Right. And a 1 in 2 billion chance, I guess it's still possible, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, look, that's what, that, look, and yeah, some people are saying, and you know, let's go through them, right? So the first one is, well, yes, but, and this is often followed by, don't you think that? And the reporter is simply, or for that matter, the blogger who is at a dinner party with you and wants to create some drama and so therefore sees themselves as a bit of a goad, a cattle prod to you to see if they can get you energized around a point. They're simply beginning to argue the other side of the story, whatever it might be. If you're a small company and you're trying to get started, they're going to say something like, well, of course, yes, but you know, you're a very small company and you don't have the resources that XYZ, this multi-billion dollar company has, right? And that's competition and that's conflict, right? It's totally common in conversation. And yet it's not because the other person would want conflict if they were using it in a conversation. They're just trying to understand your argument more fully. But if you're talking to somebody who has the power to characterize what you say, and believe me, they have the power to characterize what you say, they're wanting you to say something dramatic. And again, that's why we say start with no comment, or if you're going to stay positive and repeat your point. Another one, right? Isn't it possible? And this is what you were saying, right? Of course, anything's possible. Even if the chances are 1 in 11 billion, not just a billion, but 11 billion, right?
What does that mean?
Yeah. But when we say yes here, isn't it possible? We're allowing someone to characterize us as having said, quote, Horseman feels it's possible that this new product could be harmful to the environment, unquote.
Ouch.
They're not going to include our caveat, anything's possible. And then what's going to happen is when there are congressional hearings, and for those of you who haven't testified before Congress, it's a treat. When there are congressional hearings, this is, of course, a United States viewpoint. Sorry for those international listeners. I'm sure there are equivalents wherever you go, where there are governmental bodies. They're going to say, well, we have a quote here from one of the members of your company that says there could be environmental hazard. So your firm knew. Now the interview or the deposition becomes who knew what by when, right? They're not going to include our caveat that things possible. They're not going to accurately reproduce the scoff or the snort we start with. I mean, seriously, do we want our boss reading that in the Times on Monday morning? The right response to isn't it possible is to repeat our point of view, or gee, maybe no comment. the next one of those is you can see where, right? I mean, in other words, let's make an intellectual argument. You could see where, quote, somebody has a different point of view. This is another classic way to get you to admit that the other side has a point. And look, folks, the other side does have a point, but they don't need us making it for them. Repeat your point again. And my favorite, my personal favorite is some people are saying, because underneath, when I hear some people are saying, I'm going to just say this, when people in the media say, some people are saying, my response is intellect, my response cognitively is some people are stupid. Yeah, look, some people really think the moon landings never happened, that it's a big conspiracy theory. Some people will say anything. And frankly, folks, if you haven't figured this one out, the moment the media person says it out loud, it's true that some people are saying something that is silly and unrelated because the media person just said it. When we respond to that, the story can be written so that our very response legitimizes the counterpoint to our own, even when the counterpoint is, frankly, can be bizarre, and we have just legitimized the bizarre.
Jeez, and I thought they were just trying to have a conversation with me this whole time.
I may be Scrooge Deluxe in this cast. I feel bad. We're really hammering this point home, giving a lot of background to it, but this is important. And I think if we start here, as this is the foundation for our association with media and the press, it becomes much easier to make solid recommendations for how to appear professional and how to get your point across in the best possible way if we understand the risks.
Right. Well, unfortunately, for a lot of people, they don't understand that, you know, the media person doesn't know you, right? And even if your comments are absolutely 100% factually correct, and you're right, it doesn't mean you're going to be appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you know, something else, you know, not only, even if the media person thinks you're right or not, let me just share something with you. And this is, there's some people in the media will probably be surprised by this. The vast majority of media people that I've talked to don't know the details of what they're reporting about. They're reporters, they're professionals in the media. Okay, or they're bloggers, or they're they have a website somewhere where they aggregate information. They don't know about the details of what we're doing,
right? I mean, how could they be? I mean, if you're in the position that you are, and I mean, how could you expect somebody to understand your business as well as you do when you spent 20 years in it, or even only 10 years in it? Are you suggesting that somebody could come into your company for a week at most and all of a sudden understand all the nuances of your argument? I doubt it.
Yeah. And they're not going to give you 2 hours to lay it all out and give a presentation. They're going to get 5 minutes because they're driving the train. And frankly, if you need an hour and they only want to give you 10 minutes, the answer is, yet again, no comment. But look, even if everything we say is true, that is not a defense for the fact that those true things that we said were made to look foolish and reflected poorly on our firm, on our company. Our purpose in talking to the press is to have the press report favorably on our firm or on us. Our purpose is not for all truth to be published. So truth is not a defense. This is the equivalent of the male of the species, sorry folks, not knowing the right answer to the question, do I look fat in this? Right? That's a classic, you know, sure, you can answer truthfully if you think that whomever you're with looks fat in whatever he or she is wearing. Look, your firm has faults. Everyone knows your firm has faults. Saying out loud that your firm has faults is not a smart thing to do. Okay? We don't need the press repeating us saying our firm has faults. Let them do it. And look, folks, nobody knows who you are. Okay? No one knows you. Maybe somebody's listening who is a public figure, but usually not. But they likely do know or can learn about your firm. So anything we say, of course, is considered our firm speaking, whether we intend it to be or not.
When you shared this with me, I did not know this, but when you did share it with me, I was shocked.
This is my favorite part of the cast, by the way.
The fact that the press can legally misquote us. So explain that, because it's just almost unbelievable.
This is, when I first read it, I have to tell you, I at one point considered having a career in the press and just didn't like it. This was like in high school before I went to the academy, and I just didn't like it. And I started paying attention to the press and so on. And so I was interested in things related to it. And then I read this And I was just stunned. Now, frankly, I pay very close attention to what people say and try to understand what they mean and also how it could be misinterpreted. And that's why we make such a big deal about communication. In fact, after Horstman's first law, it's all about people. The second law is more communication is better. And when you combine that with Drucker's point that communication is what the listener does, you realize how hard it is to communicate well. But look, this is something that was made quite public in the U.S. in the Supreme Court ruling, but it may not be true elsewhere, but it's certainly true in the U.S. For those of you who think that truth and being accurately quoted will be your defense, you're mistaken. You are out of your league already. You have no say in how you're going to be quoted. The media are not rewarded for accurate quotes. They're not. Now, look, we're not saying they're rewarded for inaccurate quotes. If they're known for making stuff up or doing stuff inaccurately for a long period of time, they're going to get in trouble for that. It's just that the definition of inaccurate is broad enough that unless they purposefully put words in our mouth that actually violate our intent as they understood our intent, and we can prove that we not only didn't say those things, but we didn't intend them, they get to decide everything about what amounts to accuracy. And look, here's what it boils down to. This is how bad the problem is. You will not believe this, folks. In the U.S., the United States Supreme Court has found that if a reporter believes that they are accurately representing what we meant when we said something, they can put quotation marks around words that we did not actually say, and that is included in the right of the freedom of the press. Think about that for a minute. Seriously, that's the law in the United States. Do you really think that you can be certain that you're going to be accurately represented? I mean, literally, I'll tell you, I get asked things all the time and I have to correct people. And I know sometimes I come across as a scold because people say, oh, do you mean this? And I say, well, no, I didn't mean that. I said X and you just said Y. No. In my head, sometimes I say, aren't you listening? You came to me and asked for advice. I told you exactly what to do. And then you suggested you're going to do something that would create the completely opposite effect. And it's clear that I didn't communicate clearly, but I am amazed repeatedly how hard it is to get a point across. And now they can put quotes around things. And just moving the word just or the word not can make an enormous difference. And that is why people who are quoted in the press are often seen as repeating their points over and over again so that they can't be misquoted. That's why people actually like being on TV rather than in print, because print can move things around a little bit. And yeah. No offense against newspapers here. We love the Wall Street Journal. We love the New York Times. We love lots of newspapers. We love the Financial Times and the Globe and Mail, but nonetheless, you can be misquoted and it can be legal. And if you're talking about anything complicated, and by definition, almost anything you know of to some high degree is going to be complicated to a reporter since they don't know what you know about your industry and your company and your product and so on, you're going to be misquoted and it's going to be okay.
Yeah, that no comment thing sounds better every time.
Yeah, I know. We're just
as we get further down this cast, it sounds better.
Yeah,
better.
Yeah.
Okay, so anybody who knows you knows eventually that you would come up with some rule that had to do with Notting Hill. So, and finally, we've reached the pinnacle of career tools because now we have the Anna Scott Notting Hill rule.
Yeah, what is that? My kids like Notting Hill, even just because I've played it so many times for them. It's sort of an old fashioned movie with really good dialogue. And I have two nieces and a brother, two nieces who live in Manhattan, who routinely sent me out of the blue emails that say things like, careful there, Vicar, which is a quote from another part of the movie. But,
let me just tell you, not to bore everybody on this podcast, but when I'm with you and those kind of comments get made, I do roll my eyes, okay?
Just yeah, so you know. You do, right? Yeah. And rightfully so. Look, in the movie Notting Hill, Julia Roberts' character, who happens to be a famous actress in the movie, hides out in her soon-to-be erstwhile and former boyfriend's home, and because there's been a scandal, and then some pictures are taken of her there, and she gets furious because the press are outside taking pictures when she went there in order to avoid the press because of her previous scandal. And in it, William attempts to placate her. In other words, they're starting to argue about the press being involved, and she's a public figure and he's not. He's a nobody. And basically, he's attempting to placate her by suggesting that, you know, this is just one day's news. And he says, I mean, today's newspapers will be lining tomorrow's waste paper bins. And she says, excuse me? And he says, well, you know, it's just one day. Today's papers will all have been thrown away tomorrow. And she says this. She says, you really don't get it. This story gets filed. Every time anyone writes anything about me, they'll dig up these photos. Newspapers last forever. And folks, the internet lasts forever. If you talk to the press without training, you become Anna Scott, and everything you say will last forever. I think that actually the movie came out in 99 before Google even really hit us. And things lasted forever then. Mistakes made with the media will last forever. They will haunt your career forever, and you will regret them forever. And I've read Wall Street Journal articles where someone tried to scrub their Google search of themselves. And they were only partially successful paying money to firms that tried to do it, to remove quotes and comments that this person had made. There's a future cast in it about your public persona in public places, in new media in more detail. But folks, the Anna Scott Notting Hill Rule says it won't go away just because it's not in the news today. We beseech you, no comment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, given that, though, it doesn't make sense to go into, I'll use a military analogy here, but go into a battle where you don't know what kind of weapons your enemy has. So in this right. case, it probably makes sense to keep track of what is out there in the public so that you're not surprised.
Yeah, and what's funny about this, I'm amazed at the number of people who don't do this. And this is we are talking about press relationships here, and there's two sides to that. One, what we're saying to them, and the other side is what they're saying to or about us. And I'm amazed that people don't do this separate, because whether they're going to talk to the press or not, it would just be good just to know what your company is doing, because so often companies do such a poor job of internal communications, right? So we recommend that every person listening maintain their own clipping service to allow us to keep track of what's in the news about our firm, because the press, the media are outside your firm, and all profits come from outside our firm. And so that's where the profits are. Everybody in the company is actually a cost center, whereas customers are our profit centers, and customers are external to us. And so it makes sense to pay attention to what the outside world is saying, particularly when it's so darn easy to do it, right? In addition to our being careful in our communications with the media, all media, we ought to know what they're saying about us. We're going to learn stuff about what our company hasn't told us, but also how the media portray us, to your point. And that's good training for us in terms of how we might be treated when we're being talked to. And look, the old way of doing this is called a clipping service. For those of you who don't know, there are actually firms who do provide this, whether they literally provide clippings, literally. In the beginning, that's what they were, press clippings in physical paper form to subscribers of their services. But we don't need that, right? We just need to choose a newsreader and or an RSS feed and search. There are many places you can search on terms related to our professional interests. So look, include your own name. Right, I think Mike, don't we do a Google thing on our names and
one
of us?
Yes.
We might, yeah. And your firm's name. So I think in the beginning, one of the first ones I remember was Technorati, and you could go to Technorati and say, hey, scour everything, send your robots, your spiders out there, and look for manager tools. And we would get comments. We'd find comments on other people's blogs about us. So include your name, your firm's name, your competitors' names. I'm amazed at people who find out about stuff about their competition through the press because they're not talking to their customers about what the competition is doing with those customers. One of the problems with this in the beginning, particularly if you're a large firm, you're going to get a lot of hits, right? And maybe you only need a weekly digest that allows you to scan at a high level. And then at some times you might want to, if there's something going on that's noteworthy, you may want to do a daily review. But over time, you may have to change how many sources you ask for information about your firm or your division and so on. And you may want to add terms and take them away depending upon how much information you can digest. We're not suggesting you spend an hour on this every week, but there ought to be some easy way for you to be capturing what is being said in public about those associations you have. And you might even include nonprofits that you're associated with. So that's just something to turn the tables a little bit to keep in mind that even if we're not speaking to the press, this press is speaking about us and we need to know about it, the press and the media. And before I wrap up, let me just say one thing. We mentioned it a couple of times, but I want to repeat it. Modern and old media have goals that are different than ours, and that makes miscommunication really easy. Miscommunications that we are responsible for because we talked can be dangerous to us professionally. There are ways around it. We start by mitigating the risk before we start reaching for value.
Good. Well, that was a long one.
Yeah.
But interesting, this is not something that people talk about all that often, and it's something that has gotten a lot of folks we know into trouble. So, worth the time, I think. So,
yeah.
Why don't you wrap up for us real quick and what
sure.
we covered today.
So, just remember, the modern media and the press are different in some ways and alike in other ways in terms of some of their history and why they are the way they are. Your company probably has rules, and it says don't do it, and it probably recommends training or requires training, and if you haven't had that training, you're at risk. No comment is always appropriate. Stay positive, repeat your point when challenged, and remember, the reasons we suggest this is the media are not just reporting. They're going to use the opposing point of view for you to state your counterpoint's position, which does not look good in print or on video. Just because you're right doesn't mean your comments will be appreciated. Truth is not a defense, except in court. You will be misquoted legally, and the Anna Scott Notting Hill rule reminds us that this stuff remains forever. And then we recommend you maintain your own clipping service because that's just part of being a professional in the modern media world.
Super. All right, my friend. As always, thanks.
Thanks, partner.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that and hope to see you back here again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.